This is a HeadGum Podcast.
While Andrew and Craig believe the joy of discovery is crucial to enjoying any well-told tale, they will not shy away from spoiling specific story beats when necessary. Plus, these are books you should have read by now.
Welcome to Overdue. It's a podcast about the books you've been meaning to read. My name is Craig.
My name is Andrew.
That's not a mystery to me.
No, it's not a mystery. This is the non-mystery portion of the program.
The rest of it, super mysterious.
Mm-hmm. Very mysterious. Every week, usually one of us reads a book that we've never read before. Then we tell the other person about it and you get to come along for the ride. This month is different, and this recording is different. The month is different because it's a month of sequels.
Yes.
It's things that we've sort of visited before.
Yeah.
And this show is different because we're doing it in front of a live studio audience, our Patreon chat.
Yep.
It's our bonus episode.
For hey, February.
Everybody. February. Mm-hmm. Nice to see you. February 29th. We're getting it in.
Welcome to Leap Day. Which apparently in Roman times, for a period of time, they didn't have January or February 29th. They just did like the 24th twice or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same basic thing.
This is what I learned
today. I just wonder, like, what's the math? Can we not just make every day like a few seconds longer and just avoid this whole thing?
That could have been what we did.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that works.
By the time you get to February 28th on a leap year, you're like getting pretty out of whack.
Yeah.
Spinning around the earth wise.
Yeah. You got to reset everything.
I just feel like we should even it out a little bit as well.
Okay. Well, mm-hmm. We can get to that after we solve this week's mystery. Mm-hmm. Like Andrew said, this is our bonus episode. So thanks to
everybody in the chat's pointing out that it would screw up sunrise and sunset. And like, I just don't understand. We can all just wake up at like 4 a.m. on some days because that's when the sun is up now.
Hey, I am a big fan of the professional actress Amy Adams. I think she's very talented. There's a movie called Leap Year or something that she's in. It's not a good movie.
Is it about leap years?
I think she goes on a journey on a leap year. It's not good. Please make a better leap year movie, Hollywood. Welcome to our book podcast, where this time for our bonus recording, thank you patrons, we are talking about Nancy Drew and the Mystery at Lilac Inn by Carolyn Keene, aka who, Andrew?
Mildred Wirt
Benson. Mildred Wirt Benson?
Well, she's credited as Mildred Wirt in all the...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I guess her full Christian name is Mildred Augustine Wirt Benson.
Okay, fair enough.
We talked about the first Nancy Drew book, Secret of the Old Clock.
Secret of the Old Clock, episode 475.
475, and in that episode we talked a bit about how Nancy Drew is a franchise from our old friends at the Stratemeyer Syndicate.
Oh yeah.
The only book publishing outlet that also sounds like organized crime.
The only one.
The Stratemeyer family loved to write sort of kid and YA is not right.
It
but
didn't
like
exist.
Kid and teen and tween series fiction. But they didn't like to pay people. They didn't want any of the authors to get too big for their britches and start asking for things like money. So they had every series had like its own credited author and then a million ghostwriters who were working behind the scenes.
Yep.
So Edward Stratemeyer came up with like the outlines for the first four Nancy Drew books, including this one. But the actual like manuscript, the book itself was written by Mildred Wirt. So she is commonly considered to have like pioneered Nancy's voice and her outlook and her sense of adventurousness.
Yep.
And she wrote most of the first like two dozen-ish.
Most of them, yeah.
Nancy Drew books, not including books 8, 9, and 10, which were written by a man, Walter Carrig, who, as we talked a little bit about last time, changes the way that Nancy sounded and the things that the books were about quite a bit.
Well, and as we got a question in the chat from Stephanie and the racism. So yeah, so these books, this one came out in what, 1930, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Many of
the first four all came out in 1930.
And many of them were substantially revised starting in the late 1950s into the 60s. This one got its revision in 1961. I read conflictingly that the revision was done by Harriet Stratemeyer Adams herself, who did the first two revisions, but I also saw that this one was credited to Patricia Dahl, so I don't know. It's the syndicate man.
Yeah, like Harriet Stratemeyer Adams, who's a daughter, I think, of Edward Stratemeyer. Yeah. Yeah, she eventually came to write most of the Nancy Drew stuff. Her dad was kind of not involved in it after the first four, and she was coming up with ideas for a lot of the early ones, even when like Mildred Wirt was still writing them. And then later, once you get into the 50s and 60s, she's just writing the books directly, still as Carolyn Keene. But
So the revisions that happen in the 50s and 60s, from my understanding, do a couple of things. One is they clean up some of the plotting and make them a little more exciting. This book has car accidents, explosions, a submarine,
a time bomb.
A time bomb. Like, mm-hmm. This book is a Batman story.
Identity theft. Mm-hmm.
Stolen
credit card
diamonds.
Fraud.
Yeah. This book has a lot.
It has a lot of stuff.
And it is my understanding that not all of those elements, though some of those elements, were in the original version. I did find an article called What Would Nancy Do by Amy Benfer on Salon.com from 1999. Ooh. People have been talking about this for a while, I guess, that calls out this book as being a particularly bad offender in the like racial and social insensitivity and slurs that were common to the OG Nancy stories.
Yeah, because I was going to ask why of all the Nancy Drew sequels you picked this one, and is it because it's the most racist one?
No, I did not. Okay. I'll read this thing from the Salon article, and then I'll go to my source for why I picked this one.
Okay, great.
So this is a paragraph from the Salon article. Although each original novel is riddled with racial and social slurs, one of the worst offenders is the early version of The Mystery at Lilac Inn, a sustained allegory about how one cannot get good household help. Nancy, in need of a temporary housekeeper while faithful servant Hannah Gruen tends to his sick sister, must go to an employment agency. She interviews and dismisses by turn a, quote, colored woman who is, quote, dirty and disheveled, an Irish woman who is most, quote, unreasonable, and a, quote, Scotch lassie who doesn't know a thing about cooking. The villain in this novel is a, quote, impudent, quote, dark-complexioned girl who also fails to find employment at Drew Manor. And she solves the mystery in part by seeing a maid go to a dress shop, and she says, surely a girl in her circumstances cannot afford to buy dresses at such a place as this. Nancy.
I don't even know how the plot of this works if the villain, because the part of the thing is that the villain is impersonating Nancy Drew. This book has a lot going on.
Yeah. This book rules, I think, actually.
Yeah.
But there's like the whole like needing to find a replacement for Hannah does not happen at all in this book, and that seems to be like the substantial plot change that refocuses everything. So so yeah, I'm glad that we do not have any of that nonsense. There's like you noted like there's one character who is like dark and wiry towards the end of the book.
Yeah,
which, you know,
It could mean a lot of things, I guess, but it was the only one of those I picked up. Anyway, I guess I'm just glad, given all the stuff that's in Nancy Drew and the Mystery at Lilac Inn, I'm glad that we did not choose to read the later title, Nancy Drew and the Lost Cause of the Confederacy.
No, Cassandra, there is no blackface in this novel, at least as written, because we both read the 1961 version. So I don't know what happens in the 1930 version. I did pick this book. So this book was also our patron's choice book for the month of February. Thank you, patrons, for choosing this among some similar kind of pulpy sequels that we had on offer. And when I was searching for what to include in that poll, I knew I wanted to do Nancy Drew. So I was searching for best Nancy Drew stories, and I wound up on crimereads.com. It was an April 2023 article by Jen Fisher with Doc Wyatt. And it's 13 unforgettable Nancy Drew stories, including some action figures inspired by those stories. And here is the graph that they gave me for this book. Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Batman has the Joker. Holmes had Moriarty. The closest Nancy had to an evil nemesis is Gay Moreau, a con woman and stage former actress who served time in prison for check fraud and larceny, who appears in The Mystery at Lilac Inn. Now out of jail, she uses skills learned during her time in the theater to stage a haunting, go undercover, and even disguise herself to impersonate Nancy using her charge plate.
She really does have the vibe of, you know, in a episodic crime procedural, like once or twice a season, a recurring villain shows up for like sweeps or whatever. Uh-huh. Like that seems Gay Moreau could have been that.
Yes.
To Nancy
the,
Drew.
Bones' nemesis, Muscles, or something like that.
Skin.
Right?
Yeah.
Sadly,
Dr. Joyce Skin.
Moreau does not appear in other books, but I was like, you know, going
down
that
list. Because they throw her in prison and throw away the key at the end of this, I assume.
Yeah. And I just liked the idea of reading a book that had a, you know, bizarro Nancy or some sort of evil Nancy to contend with. And while I did just kind of spoil the book, it's also 100 years old and that's fine. And I did, it was my experience reading this book, like wondering how this character would like show up, because the book is not upfront with you about whether or not this person exists and what her deal is for a very long time. So I did have, I was like trying to solve the book based on what I'd read about it, which was a fun experience.
Yeah.
Where I know a twist, I know maybe not even a twist, but I know some character is going to be revealed, and then you're like reading the whole mystery wondering when that reveal is going to happen. But you had no idea about that.
Yeah, no, I didn't know anything about this book. And when we did the first Nancy Drew episode, you read the book and I was just kind of along for the ride. So I was getting to experience a lot of stuff for myself for the first time, which was fun. But yeah, I think I was expecting, there's a scene kind of early-ish where where a character has some diamonds and they're going to sell the diamonds so that they can keep running
an inn,
the Lilac Inn,
which
is an enterprise that she has just set out on with her soon-to-be husband.
Yep.
And boy, they don't seem very good at it. We'll talk about that some more later.
We will talk about their bad business plans.
But there's a scene where they are showing the diamonds around, and then the lights go out, and then the lights come back on, and the diamonds are gone.
Yeah.
And I thought there was going to be a little bit of
like a locked room
murder
mystery
on the Orient Express kind of situation.
Nope.
Where it would be a locked room thing, but no, it's like, oh, there is a secret trapdoor that somebody dropped a bunch of clues in front of so that Nancy can find it. The book just like goes and goes. It never stops introducing new things.
No, until the very end, there's new stuff the whole way.
Again, to compare it to a modern crime procedural, you know how when in the investigatory part of the show, it's always like the third person who they talk to who did it.
It's never the first person.
No,
never
but in Nancy Drew, you talk to 17 different people in sequence, and the 17th person is the one who finally did it. By the time
and they're probably working
the
with the 14th person that you got suspicious of, but you couldn't prove it.
Yeah. So, we got some good chat. Emma says, I, for one, support women's wrongs in reference to appreciating the evil mirror universe version of Nancy.
Sure.
Jason points out there was a CW Nancy Drew show, which I do not know anything about.
I was wondering if that was a thing because I, you know, they did.
When I was looking for art of Nancy Drew, and the reasons why I did that will become clear later.
Okay, great.
I did see like key art for sort of a CW looking kind of like young adult show. And yeah, that must be what it was.
Oh, yeah. Here she is. Sure. This exists. Okay. You know, because there was Riverdale, and then they did the
Sabrina,
spooky Sabrina.
But I don't know. Is Nancy Drew involved in the Riverdale cinematic universe?
I don't think so. But they should do it.
I don't know who all. I mean
Riverdale like went so many
companies,
places.
Two companies own everything now, so it's totally possible that
Bart could be on the show next. You know,
yeah, Bart. it's me. hey, Jughead, it's me, Bart Simpson.
Don't have a cow, Jughead.
Yeah, cowabunga. Don't.
All right, Andrew, okay. You want to start recapping this book? Is there anything else you want to talk about first?
Yeah, we could start recapping. How do we start?
Well, what is the opening? What was your impression of just like Nancy's life as we begin the novel, because you hadn't read the other one? So like,
I hadn't read the other one.
Tell me a little bit about just like her baseline life.
Nancy, so we talked a little bit about this in the first episode. I think originally she was supposed to be 16 and then she was aged up to be 18.
Correct.
I don't know if that happened in revisions or what, but
no,
I think
idea.
She reads as like 18, but still living with her dad in this.
Yep.
And there's still one weird, There are a couple of weird incidents where she has to ask her dad permission to like go skin diving or whatever it is. But she does not have a real job. She is just kind of a amateur sleuth, and she lives with her dad and she has a lot of friends and she just kind of bounces around finding clues wherever she goes.
And her dad is a lawyer. He's some sort of criminal prosecutor,
Carson Drew. Mm-hmm.
So he's friendly with the cops, but he also respects a young girl's right to solve a mystery.
Yeah, and he also is very respectful of the law.
Yeah, there is no mom. AA asks, "Where's the mom?" I don't remember where Nancy Drew's mom.
That's the greatest mystery of all, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know if she ever solves that one.
And she has a friend named Helen. Mm-hmm. And she has like a live-in servant of some kind, Hannah, their housekeeper.
Yep.
And she has solved other mysteries, which people know about. It is remarked upon.
And the book like refers to
by
them
name,
as,
by
like,
name,
like their books. I mean, I guess we could assume that this is like a Bilbo Baggins situation, and that Nancy Drew's job is that. I mean, this also is Temperance Bones Brennan's deal. She writes books about the mysteries, and that's how she. That's why she has no visible means of support. I'm trying to find that. Okay. Nancy had learned from her lawyer father, Carson Drew, that a seemingly unrelated chain of events often became a single baffling mystery. The young sleuth had found proof of this in solving several cases herself, her first being the secret of the old clock, and more recently, the bungalow mystery.
I love that because it's like, wait, there are other Nancy books? I gotta go read them.
Mm-hmm. But also, they are like italicized, and this is in a paragraph that's about things that Nancy had learned from her father, so it's like very close in on Nancy. And it's like, Nancy, does Nancy conceive of these as discrete like book like adventures that she went on, or how does she
it's unclear
how
there's
does she
a nice,
relate to her own life is
there's
my
a nice
question.
Reference to the next book at the end
later on
yeah.
Like as like a James Bond will return sort of thing.
Mm-hmm, it is. We've got questions in the chat from Emma about no Bess and George. That's who I think of as Nancy's friends. Cassandra thinks Bess and George are from some games. I think they may also be from other novels, mm-hmm. later novels.
Mm-hmm.
But no Bess and George in this one.
So something that struck me funny reading this book for the
please
first time,
tell Brett, me
is just if you go to the first page, you kind of get a like, okay, so how does Carolyn Keene how does she introduce Nancy to us?
Oh, I'm looking at the first page. Hold on, I'm going. Mm-hmm. I gotta scroll through here.
It's just the second paragraph is what I'm looking at.
Nancy, an attractive Titian blonde, grinned up at her friend. Doris was weeding a flower garden at her home along the riverbank. How do you know when we left home? Nancy's blue eyes twinkled.
So every time you meet a new character, not every time, but like two-thirds of the time, the way that they are described to you is very like looks forward.
Very looks forward. And not in a way that even attempts to imply character.
No.
How they move through space. It's literally just what color are they? Like what color is their hair?
Uh-huh.
What color are their eyes?
Well, so this I was keeping notes on this phenomenon all throughout the book, and it gave me an idea for a little game that I would like to play as we introduce ourselves to all these characters.
Please. Okay.
And so I'm going to be the host of this game.
Uh-oh.
Which I've got a graphic which may or may not have pull up here. It's called Nancy Drew Mystery Stories Hot or Not.
Oh, no.
And this is a game where you need to, maybe you remember, maybe you don't, but based on the descriptions that Mildred Wirt comes up with for the character, all the weird descriptions she decides to come up with, you need to remember if the character is canonically hot or not.
Okay. So a lot of people are popping off in the chat with emojis.
Uh-huh.
Liking this.
So Nancy Drew is the sort of the free space. So she's an attractive Titian blonde. She's hot.
Sure. And I think Titian is meant to be a strawberry.
Weird vocab word that like means blonde. Yeah.
A rosy apricot color, says a writer in the Paris Review.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Okay. Go ahead.
So, all right. To start with, we've got Helen. This is going to be pretty much in the order they're introduced in the book.
Great.
Helen Corning, who is Nancy's friend.
And who does not do much in this book other than be Nancy's friend and get hit on the head later.
Mm-hmm. So do you remember if she is hot or not based on the description that Carolyn Keene gives us?
I don't remember. What is the description? I don't remember.
Yeah, I mean, you have to guess. You have to guess if she's hot or not.
Oh, God. I thought you were going to give me the description.
No.
Is she not hot? She is engaged to Jim Archer, though.
No, I think Emily is engaged to, wait, no, yeah, Helen is engaged to Jim Archer, who we don't know. No, she is hot. Slender, pretty Helen Corning.
Slender, pretty Helen Corning. Okay, so
you
she's
did not
hot.
Get that. Yeah, you missed
okay.
that one. Okay.
No, I missed
John
it.
John McBride.
Also is, hot. He's got a crew
okay,
cut.
He is hot. A handsome, well-built man with wavy black hair.
Okay.
Okay, good job. You got that one. Emily Willoughby, who is Nancy's friend and co-owner of the Lilac Inn.
I think Emily's hot.
A dainty young woman had chestnut-colored hair set off to advantage by her white linen dress. Clearly hot.
Set off to advantage. I did
yes.
note that phrase when I saw it. Yeah.
Okay, so you're what? Like you got 2 points?
Two
okay.
for three, I think, maybe.
Mrs. Willoughby, who is Emily's aunt.
Not hot.
Yeah, old, but still hot.
What?
White hair framed her face in soft waves, and she was impeccably groomed.
Impeccably groomed!
Yeah, still hot.
Okay.
All right. So there are a couple of these that are going to be a little more subjective, but we'll see. We can argue about it if you have
so
issues with the
this
side
is a good
that
way
I've come
to go
down
through
on. Okay.
The action a little bit. Mrs. Willoughby is Emily's aunt. She is going to be responsible for taking the diamonds that her parents, who are both dead, left Emily. And she took them out of a safety deposit box. And then the diamonds are going to get stolen. And Ms. Willoughby spends most of the book crying in her room. Okay, continue.
Yeah. So Mr. Daly, who is the former owner of the Lilac Inn, who is still hanging around to help for some reason.
So what? Okay. Here's where I don't really remember what the book says, but now I'm in my head being like, should this man be hot in the movie version? And I think you could go either way. Like he's he's either got a charming, memorable character actor face. Mm-hmm. Or he's a distinguished older gentleman.
So there's a category of people who I have come down on the side of not hot by omission. And it's because Carolyn Keene has so many ways that she tells us that characters are hot that if she doesn't specifically mention a character being hot, we have to assume that they aren't.
Okay, go ahead.
So Mr. Daly is a kind-faced, white-haired man. He has a kind face.
Yeah.
Not a hot face. I'm sorry.
Not a hot face. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he is the owner of the Lilac Inn who is selling it to the engaged couple Emily and her husband to be Dick, and he is hanging around during the transition. The inn has people
the peaceful transfer of power.
It's kind of confusing what the current arrangement at the inn is. Like, there are people clearly coming for lunch to the restaurant.
And they have, like, waitresses. They describe waitresses a bunch of times.
Yeah, but they also talk about how the summer season is not in full swing, and they're still, they've sent out a bunch of brochures, but they
that
haven't
describe
finished
a bunch
the tennis
of, like,
court
yeah,
or the pool
yet. They describe
yet.
A bunch of tennis courts and pools that don't exist yet. And they're all booked up for the summer.
And they're all
still
booked up!
And they're still building the resort that they're...
And these two people are going into business together, and they're not even married yet.
No, not married yet.
These people are... I don't think that... I don't know how common divorces were in the 30s. I wish Emily all the best, but I don't know that this marriage is going to be a good one based on their
business. Yeah, and why would you go into business with the cow if you can get the milk for free, Craig?
Holy Bird says the absence of sexy words denotes an ugly countenance.
Yes, yes.
Which
okay,
is
so
Andrew's inference. Okay.
Hannah Gruen, who is Nancy's housekeeper.
Oh, she is probably dowdy. Is she
close? She is not hot. She's pleasant faced.
Okay.
She's pleasant faced, which I think is akin to kind faced.
Okay.
That's the only descriptor we get of her.
This is the or hot or not. Yeah.
All right, Mr. Fabian, who is a jeweler that they go to get the jewels appraised, at which point they find out that the jewels have been stolen and replaced with glass.
Yes, Mr. Fabian is a Skyrim NPC, which I'll elaborate on in a second. I don't think he's hot.
No, not hot. Also pleasant-faced.
Okay, so the thing with this is some hauntings or other mysterious things have been happening at the inn. On the way to the inn in their canoe, Helen and Nancy capsized a shark or a robot or something, knocked them over. They don't know. And at Emily's 21st birthday dinner, they bring out the diamonds. They show them, as Andrew said, somebody steals them in a blackout. Then they find them again very quickly and take them into town to get them appraised. And Mr. Fabian is like, well, these are all fake. And so they leave, sadly, and then a woman bumps into Nancy Drew, a real diamond falls out of Nancy Drew's handbag, and Nancy picks it up and goes, let's go see Mr. Fabian, and without saying anything, he goes, this looks like a great diamond, like a real Skyrim merchant response to,
and then
I
Nancy
clearly
sold
never
him
met
like,
you before.
Nancy sells him like 7 old carrots that she got out of a barrel somewhere.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Jean Holmes, who is a waitress at the Lilac Inn.
I think she is deliberately not hot.
She is not hot, you're correct. Complexion was very pale and her brown hair thick and combed close to her face. She wore heavy glasses. Also, later she's referred to as Shy Plain Jean.
The glasses are meant to imply that they could not be flattering at all.
A clear signifier, like if somebody's wearing big old nerd glasses, like in a movie when someone's been hot the whole time, first thing they do is they take off their glasses. So,
somebody
in a book is wearing glasses, can't be hot.
So AA asks, are these all suspects? And at this point in your character list, Andrew, I would say we have named 2 of the suspects of the novel. John, hot John with the wavy hair. He, at certain times throughout the book, is pitched as a suspect.
Though characters who we trust keep repeatedly just telling us that he's fine, which made me suspect him more.
Correct.
But he doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't. Anyway, he's kind of a suspect. There are also going to be a couple people who we need to talk about who are not on this list because they don't get an appearance-based descriptor the first time they appear.
Sure, okay.
The biggest one is the busybody social director of the Lilac Inn, Maud. Yeah.
Well,
she sucks.
Yeah, she sucks. I would say that Jean, when you meet her, is also a suspect. So we have been told that a waitress named Mary Mason left the Lilac Inn claiming it was haunted. And part of what Nancy spends the book doing is trying to track her down. Mm-hmm. And so it does stand out when the book introduces you to a new waitress who is kind of mousy, is wearing big glasses.
Big nerd glasses.
Hiding her face. And at this point, you've already heard that somebody broke into Nancy's house and stole her charge plate, which is a precursor to the credit card.
Prehistoric credit card, I assume, you can maybe only spend in one place.
It is literally a piece of metal with like your name and your address and stuff imprinted on it. And it may or may not be issued by a bank or like a department store.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
you would go to that store.
An account at the department store.
Yeah. Right. And say, like, put it on my account. And so somebody impersonating Nancy Drew used this charge plate to buy a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's happening in the background. And that also
it's
is
like
what,
a sub mystery that doesn't seem like it has anything to do with the main mystery at first, but then they start to.
Yeah, they start intersecting, and the one I do just want to shout out, I really like, so we haven't talked about the skin diving at all. There's a lot of skin diving, and the book says skin diving so many times that I know it's a real term, and also it's not a real term in the way that I think the book uses it. So skin dive, I'm sure we're going to keep playing Hot or Not, Andrew, but this is
actually
a really
great way
to go through
the book. We are
going to
keep playing Hot or Not, but this is fine. It's just, sometimes characters say things like...
they say it so many times!
I just had the quote.
The skin diving quote?
Yeah. John, would you like to make a skin diving date? John grinned. You couldn't keep me ashore. Craig, would you like to make a skin diving date with me?
You couldn't keep me ashore. So Nancy knows how to skin dive. She's really good at it. Mm-hmm. It is my understanding that skin diving is actually like free diving. It is like snorkeling without a snorkel. Maybe you wear a wetsuit and you have flippers and you have goggles and you go underwater. The river that is at least 20 feet deep factors very heavily into this book. She says that she also uses an aqualung, aka like an air tank, based on my cursory research, is not what skin diving is. Like skin diving is like you hold your breath and go. Mm-hmm. But they say skin diving at least 31 times in this book.
Times, yeah.
So often that it sounds silly, and there's only 200 pages in this book. So it's once every 10 pages, if not more, that someone is saying skin diving.
The other phrase that gets thrown around a million times that I clocked was young sleuth, which is used as a descriptor. It's used as a descriptor for Nancy 31 times. By contrast, she is only a girl detective.
Oh, yeah.
7 times.
Oh, young sleuth.
And it's important that you tell us that she's a girl detective because otherwise we wouldn't, you know.
We wouldn't know.
It's different from a regular detective who's a man.
I like the doppelganger thing when Nancy has to deal with it directly. So, like, one is even when she's uncovering
it. I'm going to pause Hot or Not so I'm not looking at the image the whole time.
That's fine. We'll bring it back. I like when she's like trying to solve the department store and she has to prove that she is Nancy Drew because Nancy Drew was already there.
There's not as much of that as I would like. Like I kind
of
want the
more
other
of it.
Person
yeah.
to take over Nancy's life for a little
yes,
bit.
Yes, yes. Well, like the one I really liked was I was going back and forth on whether or not I was supposed to suspect John. Mm-hmm. And the book is playing with that a little bit. One of the things that I thought was really a cool complication was John wants to go on a... She gets a phone call or like a message from a phone call that's supposed to be John that says, let's go on a skin diving date. And she goes to meet him and he never shows up.
A thing that you can say to somebody without getting accused of sexual harassment.
And so she goes on the skin diving date, but he never shows up. And so she goes diving anyway, and somebody throws a spear at her and it goes into her underwater camera. Later that night, she plays ping pong. Later, she plays ping pong for fun on the same day. I don't know what's wrong with her. But John didn't show up because he ran into Nancy, who said, let's hang out later. Mm-hmm. And then Nancy never showed up. And Nancy's that wasn't me.
Yeah. John is also always showing up. Like, while Nancy's, like, prowling around outside looking for clues, like, John is always there prowling around looking for clues.
Yeah.
Which does get explained later a little bit.
Because I like the tension it brings.
He's kind of a detective in an official capacity, as opposed to her, who's just a drive-by detective who lets mysteries fall into her lap. But yeah, he's very suspicious for most of the book.
He is. And I thought that the like double impersonation thing played well in terms of like, I thought I had been like, oh, well, it's definitely him. And then I was like, oh, well, it's definitely not. And then I found myself in the middle going, oh, I don't know which way this is going to go. Yeah. All right. Is there anybody else?
Carson Drew, okay, Nancy's dad.
Carson Drew, Nancy's dad. He's probably hot, right?
Tall, handsome father. Extremely hot. Definitely hot.
Okay, great.
Mrs. Stonewell, a former employer of Mary Mason, who was a waitress at the inn.
She's probably not hot. She was mean?
Well, she's hot, attractively dressed in a tailored sports suit, Craig.
Oh, you're right. I misremembered because I had in my head, I guess, Jean's accounting or no, the purported Mary Mason's accounting.
Uh-huh.
Because Nancy does wind up tracking someone who claims to be Mary Mason.
Yes.
Mary Mason, a
former waitress at the Lilac Inn who left saying it was haunted. Hot or not, Craig?
Hot.
No, not hot. She had clear-cut features and wore heavy makeup. She wore a snug-fitting lavender dress.
Oh.
So when you say clear-cut features, it's definitely not.
What does that mean?
It's not coded to mean hot. It just means that you have distinctive features.
Huh.
Heavy makeup and dress doesn't fit good. Definitely not hot. Sorry.
People in the chat saying about the former employer that attractively dressed could just mean rich.
Could mean rich, but she's attractively dressed, I think.
Oh, there's some good reads on snug fitting in the chat, whether or not it means sexy or
now,
trashy.
In this context, I believe it means that she is not Barbie thin. There's not a lot to go on, but I think that because they talk later about how the same person who's impersonating Nancy is also impersonating Mary Mason at some point.
Yes, that's true.
And they're like, that Mary Mason's build was like yours. She's not fat chicks at the.
I do think the
Lilac
heavy make. I do think the heavy makeup is the biggest tell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Dick, Emily's fiance.
He's probably hot, right?
Not hot. By omission, a young man of medium build with reddish brown hair and a rather serious expression. Medium build. Does that say hot to you?
No, it says I got what I ordered.
Yes. It's
at the drive-through.
You look at these two people and you're like, okay, neither of them is dating up or down. They both just look regular.
Yeah. And what I found it interesting how he arrives in the book. So like they're going up to this inn that her friend is purchasing with her soon to be husband to both celebrate her birthday, to help her get ready to run the inn, to help her get ready to be married because they're going to be bridesmaids. And he's not there, but his hot, maybe suspicious friend is.
Mm-hmm.
And then
canonically hot, as we've discussed.
And then he finally shows up and is like, fine.
Mm-hmm.
And nice to everyone, but ultimately, like, a suit.
He's a young man of medium build. Like, what do you expect?
Okay, is there anyone else that you have?
Carl Bard.
Oh, is he the guard?
Who is a guard at the Lilac Inn. He introduces himself by saying something like, I'm Carl Bard, the guard.
He is not hot.
Yes, not hot. He was tall, husky, and wore slacks and a sports shirt.
Okay. He's just big guy, so he shows up after...
If he was hot, Carolyn Keene would tell us.
Now, does he show up before or after the bomb explodes in Nancy's cottage?
I believe it is after the time bomb explodes.
So at some point, Nancy awakens after Helen has gone for a walk, and she hears a ticking in her cottage, because there are cottages on the property, and she leaves...
But no pool and no tennis courts.
Nope. And she leaves to go find her friend... And while she's finding her friend who got hit in the head by a stranger, her cottage literally blows up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which does lead them to talk to the police. I forgotten to mention that When the diamonds get stolen, Emily's response is, we cannot tell the police because we'll get bad press. So, which I do like. I like when a mystery is like, well, we can't tell the truth to everyone about this for a reason.
I mean, for what, don't talk to the cops for whatever reason that you have to come up with for not talking to the cops. The main thing is that you shouldn't talk to them.
Yeah, Toy Christopher, we'll explain what the robot shark was. Get ready for that. But yeah, so the bomb explodes, and then she does have to tell her dad that somebody threw a spear at her and like tried to bomb her bed and stuff. So they do put a guard on the premises. That's Carl Bard.
Yeah.
And at one point, when Nancy encounters a doppelganger and then shows up claiming to be Nancy, she does have to convince Carl Bard that she is herself, which I think is kind of fun. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Lily Merriweather, who's a one-time friend of Gay Moreau.
Yeah. Lily's probably hot, right?
Hot. A tall, slim young woman with silver blonde hair. She wore a becoming dress of jade green silk.
Yes. And
Mr. Merriweather, who is Lily's dad.
Not hot.
Hot. A fine-looking elderly man. And I am assuming here that she means a fine-looking elderly man and not like, he's fine-looking.
Well, do we get a sense that he is also a man of the arts, a performer? Is she a Nepo baby?
Well, so she is a performer. I don't think he is. I think he's just like a nice guy.
Okay. Okay.
A fine looking elderly man. And then last of all, we'll do Gay Moreau, who's the villain.
Oh, Gamer O? That's her handle?
Gay Moreau.
Gamer O?
Gamer O.
Gay Moreau is probably hot.
Yep, hot, beautiful, but avaricious.
Oh, beautiful!
Hot,
the problem.
Hot in visage, but not in spirit. I
so
guess.
these characters that we're talking about get introduced into the story very late. Mm-hmm. While Nancy at this point has had a spear thrown at her underwater, she has been run off the road by a stolen panel truck. She has been capsized. She has had someone throw a rock at her in her car. Someone bombed her cottage. Lightning struck a tree outside the inn. And she is now just running around the grounds, and she finds a letter addressed to Lily from Gay. She has no idea who these people are. And there's a reference to the blue lilacs on that I guess Mr. Daly has been carving, like a wood carving of these flowers that are
He's
all
like
over the property.
Carving a pipe of lilacs, which are also called pipes sometimes.
Yeah. And the Lily's full name is used in the letter, and so they track her down because she's in a summer stock production nearby or something. And she's like, oh yes, my friend Gay did prison time for check forgery.
Yes.
And she was very talented, but you know, very tragic. And I haven't
She didn't know how to spend her money. And
I haven't known her
destitute. Yeah.
Holly Bird asks the lightning from the bad guys. No, it's just very dramatic. There's just lightning for some reason.
I think it's Holly Bird. Now there is an earthquake that the bad guys cause.
They do cause an earthquake. That's right. They hook up a vibrating machine in the basement.
Jinkies! All right. So I don't have any more characters.
Okay.
Congratulations, Craig. By 9 points to 7. You have correctly identified whether characters in this Nancy Drew book are canonically hot or not.
All right. It's a good way to go through the book, actually. I'm surprised at how well that worked.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, did you say you didn't have Mrs. Maud on there? Or
She does not get an appearance-based description when she first shows up.
Oh, okay. Okay. She is the biggest red herring of the novel, and maybe Carolyn Keene, a.k.a. whoever, didn't want to just be like a big fishy lady who comes down the hallway. Because, like, her whole deal, Mrs. Maud, is that she is very sarcastic and gives Nancy crap all the time.
Mm-hmm. Gives everybody crap all the time. Everybody hates this busybody lady.
And she is... been hired to be the social director of the inn, which I guess means like programming events. She can play guitar, maybe, I guess.
Yeah, it's just, she introduced her companion as Mrs. Maud Potter and said she was to be the inn social director for the summer. There is no, you don't know what Maud looks like.
And she is also giving Aunt Willoughby a bunch of garbage all the time for reasons that are unclear.
This is the dumbest part of the entire
book. Oh, boy.
Because we are told that Mrs. Willoughby is enthralled to Maud Potter because Maud Potter has something on her.
Yeah.
And it later turns out that Maud Potter has nothing on her and is just like threatening to say bad things about her.
Yes. Yes. And she wasn't thinking rationally.
A form of blackmail where I don't have any leverage, but you do what I say anyway.
I will publicly accuse you of something for which I have no proof. And mm-hmm. you fold like a wet towel.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And she is the biggest red herring in the novel because like multiple characters are always complaining about how like mean and annoying she is.
If this is a modern procedural in any big way, it's that you're supposed to suspect her for a good chunk of the book.
Yep. Yep.
And it's so obvious that you're supposed to suspect her that of course it can't possibly be her.
At best, I was wondering who she might be in league with. This book certainly leaves open from the beginning the possibility that there are multiple people involved in whatever the thing is,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, so on the canoe ride to the inn in the first place, Helen and Nancy see some guy with a crew cut who may or may not have been responsible for their boat capsizing. Obviously, there's somebody back in town who is impersonating Nancy. There's somebody who's been causing trouble at the inn. The theft of the diamonds in the first place probably needed at least two people, one to switch off the lights and one to steal the diamonds. So, like, throughout the whole novel, you are getting this, like, it's probably a network of bad guys and it's like, what if it's John? What if it's Maud? What if it's somebody else we've never met before?
Yeah, I mean, by the time you get to the end of the story, it is easier to list the Lilac Inn employees who are not involved in these crimes in some way.
There's a groundskeeper. There's two groundskeepers. There's a good one whose name I forget and an evil one whose name is Gil.
Yeah, Gil, the evil groundskeeper.
Yeah, who
I think there's at least three groundskeepers.
Yeah, yep. But so yeah, the whole like back part of it where she finds out about, this is the thing I wanted to say. When she goes to talk to Lily, she and Helen are undercover as theater people. That's their cover.
What's the dumb name she makes up?
Oh, can you look it up? Cause it's very good. She calls Helen Helga.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember what Nancy's name is, but she's like, I'm an actress and this is my friend, a dancer.
Yeah.
We're trying to track down my old friend Gay Moreau, who I can't tell you any more information about because I just learned that she existed.
Yeah, you know Gay. I don't know her. You know, I don't know her last name, but maybe you know her last name.
Did you find Nancy's name yet?
Drew Gruen.
Drew Gruen. Oh, because it's Hannah Gruen.
D-R-U. It's her first name. Drew.
Of course.
Gruen.
Perfect.
I'm Drew Gruen, an actress, and this is my friend Helga Marsh, a dancer.
A dancer. I like that Lily is like, yes, my friend went to jail for check forgery and, quote, swore revenge on the person who put her there.
Yeah, but I don't have any other information to give you at this time.
Nope.
Because that would make it too easy.
I just like the idea of going to jail for check forgery, but having someone that you could swear revenge against.
Yeah.
Like, you forged the checks.
Yeah, but somebody threw you in jail for it, and they're going to pay for their crime
of
punishing you for your crimes.
That's fair. So I guess we should we just get to, like, the denouement of the book, Andrew?
Yeah, I think that's the thing to do.
Okay. I'm trying to remember. So, okay, there's Nancy's whole thing where she dresses up as a ghost.
That's very complicated. Nancy, like, decides she's going to dress up as a ghost because someone else has been wandering around dressed up as a ghost. And Nancy's like, well, if I dress up as a ghost, then the person who's teaming up with the person who's dressing up as a ghost might come and call me the ghost person's name. And doing that, I will find the perpetrator. And of course, the first thing Nancy does, the very first thing, is she sees the person who looks like she sees the Nancy Drew impersonator and she says out loud, "My impersonator," immediately blowing her cover and giving her impersonator time to get away.
Yeah. Yeah. And then later she goes out and is like snooping around and stumbles upon the bad guy crew. And they do kidnap her and tie
there's
her
like
up.
Five or six of there's like
there's
a lot
of guys. There's Gay Moreau, the former actress who has been impersonating Nancy Drew. There is Gil, the evil groundskeeper. There is Simon, somebody who that they're selling their because also they've been stealing equipment from the inn.
Yeah,
but also as we learn later, they've been like somehow stealing. Like Cold War era electronic equipment.
Beth, in response to this was not Cold War era. This is 1930. This is pre Cold War.
Well, I guess
like stealing equipment from the Kaisers.
Well, this was. I guess I'm wondering though because this was updated in 1961, and I don't know if the electronics were in the original version or not. Because I did read a summary to make sure I hadn't missed anything where they talk about her getting. When she solves it, she gets a Distinguished Citizen Service Medal.
A civilian service medal.
Because she like uncovered a Cold War spy ring or something, which is not actually what's in the book.
Beth in the chat of Nancy's convoluted scheme says this is why she still lives at home. This is somebody with too much time on their hands.
So this whole part where she's kidnapped, Andrew, tell me about the whole part where she's kidnapped.
She's gonna uncover the mystery and she finds Gay Moreau and discovers that she's been impersonating Nancy and she's been Jean Holmes this whole time. And she was one of the Merry Masons, not both of them, but one.
Yeah.
Of them.
Just one of them for some reason.
And then she gets like hogtied and thrown into a little submarine and like driven up the river to their like hideout boat, like
their
a different
hideout
boat.
So they have a they have an abandoned cabin that they've been storing some stuff in. They have a miniature submarine. This river must be very deep.
It's a big river
that they are using.
It's not big enough that you can skin dive or whatever in it without getting your foot caught between rocks, but yeah. It is big enough that you could have a 1960s era submarine in it. Steal a U-boat from the government and drive it in this river.
This river is like the cliff in Jurassic Park by the T-Rex pen, where it is as deep or as like, you know, as steep a fall as Steven Spielberg needs it to be for dramatic effect.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, first they put her in the submarine.
Oh, dang, I had a whole nother two people on the hot or not list. Craig, the diver, who is an accomplice.
Oh, yeah.
Gay Moreau.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. This is a bonus round.
Yep. Oh, do you have more hot or not?
Yeah, hot or not. Hot
keep
or not.
Going. Keep going.
No, that's the diver who's an accomplice.
Oh, he's hot. He's got a crew cut, right?
No, not hot. Dark, wiry, had an impassive expression.
Oh, no.
Bud, who's an accomplice.
Hot.
No, not hot. A stocky man of about 30.
God dang the it.
Only Gay Moreau is hot as a as an avaricious like ingenue character.
So yes, they take her in the submarine to their hideout boat. You're right, and that I think is where Gay Moreau villain monologues to her for a while.
Yeah, that's where all the villains take turns, kind of answering all of Nancy's questions about how they pulled it all off.
Well, and it's like they've been stealing the electronics.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they were messing with the inn in the first place.
It's a little bit that Gay Moreau knew the place.
Oh, you're right.
And so
had
a lot of information about
she
like
spent
how
time there as
around.
A kid. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it's partly that they wanted to like steal tools so they could work on their Cold War military grade weapons that they're stealing.
Yes, and then also Nancy's dad is the one who prosecuted her, mm-hmm. which is why she goes and takes money from Nancy Drew.
Yes.
To get back
again,
her.
Again, Nancy's father, fully alive, and
He's in this book.
Revenge could be taken out on him directly.
Yeah.
But instead, Gay Moreau literally punishing Nancy for the sins of her father.
Yes.
I think there's a different version of this where Gay tries to win Nancy over by telling her about all the weird criminals who her dad has defended or whatever over the years.
Is that like a Harley Quinn situation, maybe? Yeah,
maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
Nancy Drew and Gay Moreau could do like a Harley Quinn Poison Ivy.
Yes,
sort
that's
of
what
thing.
I was wondering.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And then she stole the diamonds because it was an opportunity and it could help finance their situation.
Sarah says in the chat, this is an interesting thing. Sarah says, note this convolution was written for preteen girls who would read the same book over and over and over. Do we think that people read these kind of books over and over and over, or do you read each one and go on to the next one of the like 160 books in the series that there are? I just kind of wonder if, because thinking about Goosebumps, like there are ones that stick out, but there are also ones that don't, you know?
I wonder. I don't know.
People seem to think both, yeah.
Yeah, I would think it's a little bit of both, right? Where mm-hmm. it's like, the books are very aware that they want you to buy the new ones. It does feel very Scholastic Book Fair of to be like, got to go get the next one. Mm-hmm. But I do, you know, anecdotally talking to people who have ever, you know, had Nancy Drew books growing up, like, yeah, you read and reread them because you had them and they're very easy to read. And, you know, maybe you like one character or maybe you like that story in the same way that you might watch you know, people watch reruns of Law and Order all the time. You know, like, this is the one with Leslie Odom Jr. in it. Like, this is the one I like to see where he's the priest again.
A few people kind of saying didn't reread this kind of thing, except for maybe one to two favorites, which I think is pretty,
yeah,
which maybe. Is my relationship to Goosebumps, I think.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. I buy that. Mm-hmm. But so then the boat crashes against something, not a submarine.
I guess.
And then it bursts into flames.
And then it spontaneously lights on fire, and then the cops show up.
Yeah.
And they catch everybody.
And there's one last, oh no, who's Nancy moment, which I did appreciate, mm-hmm. where Gay Moreau tries to say, no, she's the real Nancy Drew, and Nancy's dad has to get close enough to see his daughter before they expose her. And then I do have the quote from where she is rewarded for her efforts, Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes this book is written like a webcomic where, like, so earlier in the book, before she does the ghost, like pretend to be the ghost thing, she's talking to somebody, and then apropos of nothing, it's like it's something to the effect of like, and then Nancy had a great idea. I will try it, she said out loud, and then mm-hmm. just like, and then we cut to the next thing. You're like, okay, great. Mm-hmm. Similarly, we get a whole rundown of like what the criminals were really up to and what they were doing.
Was a secret army detective. He says at the beginning of the book, I can't tell you what I'm doing. It's classified. That means it's confidential, and I can't tell civilians about it. He's kind of a big dip. He's a big jerk about it.
But he's been investigating this crime ring for a while, and he tells Nancy what's going on. Quote, a week later, Nancy was honored at a colorful army ceremony where she was presented with the Distinguished Civilian Service Medal for outstanding work. Quote, this is marvelous. Thank you, she said. To who? What am I watching? There's not even a scene here, because then it just moves on to her talking with her friends. She just says, this is marvelous. Thank you to no one.
My absolute favorite exchange in the entire book is it's an early scene where Emily and Helen maybe and John are all like having lunch together. And where is it? So they're chatting, and then not a very gallant guy, John remarked. He asked several questions about the man with the crew cut and seemed very much disappointed when Helen could add nothing more to the description. Later, Nancy said to John, your career in the army must be interesting. Do you have a special assignment? Wish I could tell you, Nancy, but it's classified or confidential to civilians. I understand, Nancy smiled. Presently, she turned to Emily. I saw Doris Drake on the way here. Her house isn't far away, is it? It's just like a bunch of people barely making small talk with each other. About a mile up the road, Emily answered. After luncheon, Emily offered to show Nancy and Helen around the inn and take them on a tour of the extensive ground.
That was my reaction to the, like, and then that night they spent the evening playing ping pong on the same day that she'd had a spear thrown at her. And you're like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. Like, you can't show anybody the details of any social interaction because it's not pertinent to the mystery, Craig.
No, it's not. Well, and then
we all know how important mystery is to Nancy Drew.
Yep. So the book ends with
it's the best ending to any book we've ever read.
We're excited about the coming nuptials of Emily and Dick. And of course we know that Helen is engaged. And there's no funny business here between John and Nancy, though.
No, there's some, like, meaningful looks, but, like, not in, like, we can't bring this guy back. The book seems to recognize that none of these people can possibly be carried forward to subsequent Nancy Drew books.
Secretly, she wondered when another sleuthing adventure would come her way. Soon, I hope, Nancy thought. She was to have her wish when she found herself involved in the italics Secret of Shadow Ranch. Later,
this is a young woman, by the way, who was nearly exploded by a pipe bomb, hit in the face with a rock, speared in a river,
and tied up in a burning boat,
and left to die in a burning boat. And she's like, "Oh boy, I sure hope I have more mysteries a coming."
Later, as Nancy, Helen, and Emily were talking, the two older girls suddenly stopped speaking on the subject of their forthcoming weddings. Helen said, "Goodness, Nancy, you must be tired of us talking about steady partners," when Nancy interrupted. Laughing gaily, she said, "Not at all. For the present, my steady partner is going to be mystery."
End of book. Cut to black.
That's the last line in the book.
That's the last line. And
I love it so much.
Incredible. Ace hero.
Yeah. For real.
This is ace representation. Nancy Drew married to mystery.
Now, are we sure that it is not the unfortunate man named Mystery?
I mean, it's
the
not,
MRA man.
It's not capitalized, so I okay. don't think so.
Yeah. Okay, good. I'm looking out for Nancy here. Mm-hmm. I love that she doesn't. She doesn't want to get married. She's married to her work.
She's married to the work, which she doesn't get paid for and does not do in any kind of official capacity.
Kirsten says, "Okay, every book now needs to end with, quote, my steady partner is going to be genre."
My steady partner is going to be science fiction.
Yeah, this is a pretty fun book, Andrew. Did you?
It was fun. It was stupid.
What was your sensation of solving it or trying to figure out what was happening?
The way it's stupid is the way that we cover a lot of, like, kids and YA fiction, where we decide that as a bit we're going to think about it all way too hard, and none of it was, like, built to sustain that, and that's what the comedy comes from.
Oh yeah, Holy Bird asked, did they catch her? Yes, they caught her.
Mm-hmm.
Attracted the attention of the river police, who then showed up and mm-hmm. rounded up the criminals. Yes, sorry.
So wait, what was your question? Because
What was it like to try and solve the mystery as you were reading?
I just think, and you said this a little bit in the first book too, is, like, what constitutes a mystery is kind of loosely defined in this book. And then by the end, where, okay, this certainly has been an involved and dangerous mystery, said Carson Drew, Nancy's adult lawyer father. And it's just like, when it escalates to people stealing advanced, like, weapons and equipment from the United States military and blowing people up with IEDs and, like, tying them up on a boat and setting them on fire, I feel like we've graduated from mystery to, like, felony, at least. Like, I feel like mystery is not enough of a word to describe what's going on here.
The stolen diamonds would have been enough of a mystery. Uh-huh. Or I was honestly, all of the somebody is causing chaos at the inn. You know, like they talk a little bit about the previous owner before Mr. Daly. Like, mm-hmm. I was wondering if this was going to be like somebody didn't want these young whippersnappers to take over the inn and was causing trouble. That's the mystery I thought.
That would have been more of a mystery. Yeah, and like in terms of this is a thing with clues that you can solve. I feel like
yep. You can't solve this.
Scooby-Doo and like Encyclopedia Brown are more solvable in that you yep. get to the end of the story, and if you think about it hard enough, you can look back and see all the clues. I just don't. Nancy finds things that she calls clues, but they're rarely illuminating in any specific way.
It's a and little it's Encyclopedia about, like, Brown.
Hmm?
It's a little Encyclopedia Brown where it's like, and he figured it out.
I think Encyclopedia Brown is actually better at constructing a mystery and giving you like little details and clues to pay attention to. Right. And this, the closest thing you get to that is Nancy will sense people lying or like detect them fidgeting yes. or something. And yes. like, it's more about, okay, who is the book telling you or not telling you to suspect? And like, how does that make you feel? It's yes. more that, it's more vibes based than
it is very vibes based. You're right. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's a good way to describe it. It is like, mm-hmm. You're not solving something as much as you are like, which one is the criminal here? Which one will be the criminal at the end?
We've got a lot. Maya says the last Nancy Drew novel is she finally leaves her dad's house and works for the CIA. Brent says Nancy Drew finds Osama bin Laden.
Oh, boy. I did see Zero Dark Thirty.
I'm just thinking of that picture of like Obama and all the people like in the room watching, like looking at the screens really intently. And then also like Nancy Drew
with her like flashlight, like pointing it at the screen yeah. at Obama's face.
And she calls George W. Bush and she's like, yeah, we got it.
Caroline wants us to shout out the Nancy Drew Hark a Vagrant comics. Hark a yeah. Vagrant. Very good. Mm-hmm. Go check it out. So yeah, that's Nancy Drew and the Mystery at Lilac Inn. She's coming back for more adventures. You can go check them out, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get out of here, Andrew, is there anything else you want to say about Nancy Drew?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
I had my one bit and I've expended it and now I'm done.
It worked pretty well.
Thank you.
So because this was a bonus stream with our overdue Patreon supporters, it felt like a good time to share another thing that our Patreon supporters created, which is the Odie Awards for 2023.
Not affiliated with the Garfield Empire or Jim Davis in any way.
No, not at all. No. I think they were initially called the Opies because like mm-hmm. overdue podcasties.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody suggested that they be called the Odies, which was a great idea.
Possibly because of our Discord's rich
Garfield culture, fan yeah. culture, mm-hmm. yes. And so I do want to thank Nora in the Discord who organized the whole voting and nominating process, and then we'll be sharing some graphics by Zup on the Discord that they made that we can share as well. But I do want to go through the list.
Emma does point out that Jim Davis was nominated for an Odie Award.
So in no particular order, the best important, and so these categories were not only voted on by our members, but they were submitted by our members, our Discord members as well. Best important book read in 2023, To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. Best, quote, book Andrew would hate read in 2023, Ready Player One by Ernest Cline.
Yeah, book Andrew did hate.
Best Just Vibes book read in 2023, A Prayer for the Crown Shy by Becky Chambers. Becky Chambers, a big, a lot of folks love Becky in the Discord.
Have we done her before?
Yes, we did. Okay. The Worst Bestsellers crew told us about, what is it, Long Way to a Something
Oh,
Planet.
It was like the spaceship one?
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody, okay. Yeah, I remember
what is
this
the
now,
name
right.
of that? Somebody in the chat is going to tell us the name of this book. They'll tell us.
Go
Cryingest book read in 2023, The Song of Achilles by Madeline Miller. Weirdest book read in 2023, Piranesi by Susanna Clarke. I've been thinking about that one as the follow-up to Doctor Strange, Mr. Norrell, or whatever that book is called.
Mm-hmm.
Funniest book read in 2023, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Douglas Adams. Best Anthology, read in 2023, Exhalation by Ted Chiang.
The Best Long Way to a Small Angry Planet.
There it is.
Caroline and Caitlin and Holy Bird.
And yeah, everybody, because everybody yeah. loves that book. Yeah. Best translated book, The Iliad by Homer, translator Emily Wilson. Best audiobook read in 2023, American Gods by Neil Gaiman. Best romance book read in 2023, The Song of Achilles by Madeline Miller. Graphic fiction or nonfiction book, Nimona by N.D. Stevenson. Best nonfiction book, I think was a tie, I guess. That's a little confusing. But nonfiction book, Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer and I'm Glad My Mom Died by Jeanette McCurdy. Best memoir, Crying in H Mart by Michelle Zahner. Best science fiction book read in 2023. These were all read in 2023, not released in 2023. All Systems yeah. Read by Martha Wells. Fantasy book read in 2023, Legends and Lattes by Travis Baldry. Young adult book, The Graveyard Book by Neil Gaiman. Best middle grade book, The Westing Game by Ellen Raskin.
Yeah, that one.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Best children's book, Where the Wild Things Are by Maurice Sendak. I would say Simon's best book of 2023 is probably a Chris Houghton book, Shush, We Have a Plan.
Mm-hmm.
He loves that book. Best historical fiction book read in 23, Pachinko, Minjin Lee. Horror book, The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson. Best thriller book read in 2023, Ghost Train by Louise Foley. Choose your own adventure.
It is thrilling if you read it the right way. It's very disappointing if you read it the wrong way.
We did need
two tries.
Best mystery book read in 2023, Murder on the Orient Express by Agatha Christie. Best book featured on Overdue in 2023, All Systems Read by Martha Wells. Best book published in 2023, The Iliad by Homer, translator Emily Wilson. And the best book read in 2023, The Fifth Season by N.K. Jemisin. A great book. Mm. I'm glad that people read it.
Well, Jim Davis, it's an honor just to be nominated. I'm sorry that you didn't take home the... the gold in any of those categories, but there's always next year.
So thanks to everybody who participated in the ODs process. We'll probably do them again next year. And thanks to Nora for organizing it once again. If you have any thoughts on those winners or you have any thoughts on mysteries that may or may not be mysteries, you can send us an email, overduepod@gmail.com. Find us on social media at Overdue Pod. We try to be on Blue Sky and Instagram these days. Find us over there. Our theme song is composed by Nick Larangis. Andrew, if folks want to know more about the show, where do they go?
Over to Jim Davis is the DiCaprio of the Odies. <his friend. laughs>
That's very good.
OverduePodcast.com is our internet website. We have the books that we have read and are going to read. Our March schedule will be up soon, or is already, I guess, depending on when you're listening to this.
Yep.
Patreon.com/OverduePod. People in chat know about it already, but if you subscribe at a certain level, you can sit on these chats. You can chat with us. You have fun. You can be in the Discord. What do we got going on there? We got the Odies. Some people have been organizing kind of a loose, like, voice chat book club periodically lately, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, where you don't have to read books. You're just kind of showing up and talking about what you've read lately. It seems like a cool hang. Show on up.
Yes. Leah, is the Odie stuff happening in the Discord? Yes, is one of the things happening in the Discord.
Yep.
What else? I think that's it, right?
That's it. You do have to be a Patreon supporter at any level to join the Discord. So that's
Discord's cheap, everybody. I'm just saying.
Andrew, thanks for making a fun Mark Zuckerberg inspired game for us to play today. I can't wait to see what horrific world changing social network this episode spawns.
I can't. Yeah. I hope it's a good one. I hope it's great. I hope it earns us a lot of money.
Nancy so we Drew can buy the part mystery of Hawaii of the election misinformation.
Yes. Nancy Drew and the leaked personal data. All right, everybody. Thank you for hanging out with us in the chat. Thank you for listening to our podcast, which is the main thing people do with podcasts.
Yeah.
It's great. We like it a lot. We like you a lot. Anyway, until we solve the next mystery with you, please try to be happy.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.